Hello and welcome back to the Next Gen Nats podcast. I am Tanner. I'm joined here today with my co-host Alex. Alex, how you doing, man?
Hi, I'm tired.
Aren't we all? It is a Sunday night and I want to be watching basketball right now, but here we are doing the only thing I'd rather be doing, recording, talking about our brave Nationals who bravely show up to each game to watch themselves get slaughtered mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, just about every way you can.
True.
And here we are watching it happen. It's like schadenfreude, but towards yourself. I think they call that masochism. Regardless.
It's been like a 3-year schadenfreude experiment, right? It's just like
October 30th, 2019, one of the best days of my life. Every day after that, pain, suffering.
Death, but even.
Regardless, we move. So, I just got back from Chicago, and I actually I did not treat myself. I don't got money like that. But I did go to a Cubs game, Cubs versus Dodgers, and it was the game on Thursday where James Outman hit a grand slam in the top of the ninth inning. It was awesome. The crowd was insane, even though it was a Dodgers hit. And everyone's going to always tell you this, but if you ever have a chance, even the slightest chance, to go to Wrigley Field, you got to do it. It was an awesome field. It was a beautiful night. Check it out.
Was that the game that Mookie played short?
Yes, and he made that play. And I don't remember it because I was like looking behind my chair or something. I just remember everyone was like, yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
I took a tour of Wrigley in 2021. Beautiful digs.
It's a great place. It really makes me sad that, because Nationals Park is a good park, but it's, you know, obviously never going to have that history.
I'm pretty sure
they actually, like, I could be completely making this up, but I'm pretty sure Nationals Park has the most, like, average dimensions of any stadium in the MLB.
Uh-huh. I think it actually has, like, some of the smaller concourses in the league. Really? And, like, Jumbotron size, like, excluding, like, those, like, ribbons on, like, the edge of the levels, I think it's, like, one of the smaller ones.
Well, shockingly enough, despite my love for baseball, I've only ever been to two stadiums that I remember, Nats Park and now Wrigley, even though I did go to Busch when I was, like, one. And I sat behind home plate, actually.
Attaboy.
I was, again, one. I bring this up, this whole little parable, because the grand slam at the top of the ninth was hit by James Outman, who was playing for the Dodgers. He was leading off. He had that huge home run. It was a 3-2. I think it was two outs. And all I could think about in that moment was, who is Outman? Who is this guy? And I get back to the hotel and I check Twitter and he's a rookie. Everyone's like, he's going for the rookie of the year competition or for the in the rookie of the year race. He's got to be, you know, number one now. And I'm like, who is this guy? And it just makes me think, like, the Dodgers are so spoiled because they have so many great MLB players and high level stars and all stars. And they also have just a wealth of riches in the farm system. And you kind of got to give respect to Friedman because at a point it becomes like, man, he, even though he does get to work with the most luxurious, you know, budget in the game, there are plenty of teams which have money in that area and do not put together a team as
anywhere close,
as frightening on both, you know, the minor league and major league fronts. So, pretty impressive job by Freeman.
So this is fitting. I had my senior, like, I guess it's a senior thesis. I'm in this, like, a like advanced program, I guess. And one of the things they do for your senior year is, like, you have to build this big paper on whatever you want. And I wrote about baseball. It was like, how do teams, like, maximize wins, basically? And it was like coaching and spending, like, smartly and all that. I didn't include the Dodgers on it, but I mean, they're a very good example of that, just like coaching and all that. One of the people that I love to bring up, though, is Trace Thompson. Whenever they talk about, like, the Dodgers and like the Dodgers hitting factory, because it was like 2016, like, basically league average hitter, then fell off a cliff, had like a negative, like, had like a 2 OPS plus in 2018, and then went to the Cubs, had like like a 194 OPS plus, like Juan Soto type season in 2021, then fell off a cliff again, and now he's back with the Dodgers and everyone's saying, oh my god, what a great pickup. So
they just
they do it good there.
Like, Mats Muncy was a serious MVP candidate for a while last year. And I was like, look, Mats Muncy, good player, but you put him anywhere else, and he's probably like a, definitely a starter, definitely, you know, a four or five hitter, but there's no way he's a MLB MVP kind of type player. I don't get that.
It's but, a Dodgers lab. They have like a cryogenic chamber underneath the stadium.
I really wish that the Nationals had that kind of blessing, because every year these guys have a new great rookie or young guy. And it reminds me of the Rays also. When Wander Franco was just coming up, I think they pulled up Taylor Walls like 1 or 2 or 3 weeks before him. And I was like, wait, they have this other middle infielder who is also a top prospect who is also immediately going to start raking? Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't
get it. They don't even have Gavin Lux. Lux really hasn't played a full season. I mean, last year kind of was 129 games, but like, it's every year they're just pulling out a guy out of nowhere. And it's like, you know, you even see it in Washington. I know we're getting super sidetracked here, but like, Nationals trade Turner, Scherzer for Kieber and Josiah, and it's like
Josiah, Gerardo Carrillo, and Donovan Casey.
Yeah, and it's like Josiah's like, oh my god, he's gonna be a, you know, just star. A superstar. You know, and then he gets, and it's like, oh, Jim Hickey, let him cook now. And he's like, I mean, he's getting better this year. He's been decent, kind of shafted by his offense, but it's not the same, you know.
Yeah, well. I don't really know how we got here, but the point is there are teams like the Dodgers and the Rays who have this wealth of riches, both in the budget spending in the MLB department and in the minors department. And then you got the Nationals, who have really, credit to them, which granted, it shouldn't be hard to do when you sell off every player on your team, you know, worth anything, but they have been able to revamp their bottom of the league caliber farm system, and they've turned it into a top 15, top 10 farm system. And now they have headliner guys, which they didn't really have before. You know, every farm system, you like to have a guy who, even if he's not the majors yet, everyone is kind of keeping an eye on, and someone who you want to be able to think about where you go, okay, I wonder where he's going to be, you know, 2 years from now. I wonder where he's going to make his call up. And when Adley was, you know, playing his final few games in the minors, everyone was so excited, and, you know, Wander Franco. And the Nationals didn't have that for a while. Carter Kieboom did not have that kind of sway with him. But now you got guys like Elijah Green and James Wood, and it makes you feel a little bit happier about maybe the future of this team. We have some pieces that we can put together.
Yeah.
And my rule is that if you are looking at the top 30, top 100 prospects for any team, or any, I mean, for any team, really, one out of every three guys is going to do nothing at all. There's no science behind that, just a complete benchmark. You don't know which one of the three. But right now, go back and look at a top 10 prospects for any team from 2012. And of the top 10, I guarantee you at least four of them did nothing in the
end.
So that's why you have to be careful. And that's why you don't win championships in the minor leagues. You don't win championships with, you know, guys who might be something. The Nationals have some good guys, but who's to say that Brady House won't flame out the moment he hits the MLB? I'm not saying he will, but you know as well as I do that this is just it's a crapshoot. To quote Billy Bean a la Moneyball, you don't have a crystal ball and you can't see that guy's future any better than I can. You know, it's a crapshoot.
Actually,
it's
Brad like, Pitt that you're quoting, but
is Brad Pitt playing that movie, Alex?
Yeah, Brad Pitt is Billy Bean.
Crazy.
And Jonah Hill is Paul D. Podesta playing as Peter Brand. I watched that movie a lot.
I don't know who Paul D. Podesta is.
Wait, you don't know who Paul D. Podesta is?
Am I supposed to?
He's Peter Brand. Peter Brand isn't a real person.
Oh, you're totally right. That's so embarrassing. No, I'm not gonna say I knew that because I obviously didn't know that, but like I knew that, but I didn't like know that. You know what I'm saying?
It's all right. I've been looking into it a lot. I actually read Moneyball.
Oh, interesting. I've not actually read the book, despite being told I need to read the book. Point is, the Nationals are starting to improve on the minor league, double A, triple A, single A, et cetera, side of the ball. But on the major league side of the ball, as has been discussed ad nauseum, they're not quite there yet. And you have to, before you start coming down on the coaching staff and the front office, which is completely valid, and we will get to that, you do have to understand that there's not a lot of good players being worked with.
Yeah, there's not many places you can go.
We have Jamer Candelario batting in crucial situations consistently, and you can't even get mad about it because it's like, well, who else would it be? But regardless, we are still going to come down on the management, because there are a lot of decisions which are being made which just boggle the mind. So the big one that has all of the fan base in an uproar is the consistency with which Dom Smith is batting second in the lineup. Now, there's been a wave in recent years that the number two spot is actually the most valuable spot because you get the most at-bats, basically, but you also get the highest... you also get a high chance
of you get ducks on the pond. Yeah,
ducks on the pond, as someone might say. So you want to put your best hitter in there. We had Juan Soto in there for a while, even though apparently I can't really speak too well for this, but I saw something that said he actually didn't like that.
Yeah, he didn't want to play there, but Dave, he kept playing him there because he was like, he knew it was the best place. Like, he was like, oh no, we're gonna get the best value out of you, even though you're probably not in the right headspace to play there because you don't want to play there.
But I know that it's kind of going against my baseball morals to say that he did the wrong thing, because you probably should play your best hitter in the two spot. But if you're trying to keep Juan Soto happy, you do not. If he says he wants to bat seventh, you bat him seventh, man. I don't care. However, Juan Soto is currently batting 192 this year. In 80 at-bats, he only has 15 hits. And his OPS plus is just over 100. He's having a rough year. He's slugging 385. I don't really know what's happening to him. I haven't watched a lot of Padres games. I haven't really been watching.
He's living in Ha-Seong Kim's shadow. He really apparently he's messed up because of the pitch clock. That's what I heard. He said something that, like, you can't play your mind games anymore because you're limited to, like, it's 15 seconds without runners on, but you, like, as the hitter, have to be ready by, like, 10 or 8 seconds. So you can't, you know, like, shuffle or mess with the gloves or whatever, which, I don't really know how to feel about that. But if you're a Juan Soto caliber hitter, there's something more than that causing such a fall off.
Yeah, but also, Soto's got to be probably number one on the list of the most neurotic hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he was definitely a guy who very much needed his routine. So I can understand how the pitch clock would be affecting him. But that was a point where you got to say, like, look, everyone else in the league is adjusting to it just fine. And my God, what a great addition. Like, Manfred, absolutely winning idea here to finally just push this through. Like, we finally got rid of this idea that you need to have all of this time-wasting, boring, random, unnecessary
spitting and belt adjusting for
fluff. That's all it was. It was fluff. It was padding the runtime. Like, we're trying to fill the slot of a TV, you know,
trying to get it up to 3 hours.
Yeah, it was so unnecessary. And
I will say, now having, I know I was down on it, but having gone to games now and seeing it, like, in person and all that, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. Oh, I still think you can maybe give, like, an ounce or two of buffer where, like, you're still speeding up the game, but you're not causing as many stoppages to call it, but it's fine.
Yeah, watching it in person for the first time this year was great, because it would be like, wow, they would throw a pitch, and then I would, like, look down and look back up, and they would be throwing the second pitch. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
That said, I am a nerd that likes to keep score, so it kind of throws me off. I can't get, like, a bev or something.
I get that, but I don't think they're accounting for the greater scorekeepers of the region.
Yeah.
Point is that the two-hole hitter should be hitting better than 243 with no home runs and a 243 slugging and a 68 OBP plus.
Attaboy.
OPS plus. But that is what Dom Smith is hitting. He is incalculably getting these valuable bats, and We have no idea why. I'm pretty sure in the past few days he's been slotted out of the two hole.
Yeah, he's fallen down the lineup after about 2 weeks of people yelling at him to move down the order. He finally did.
Yeah, I just don't even understand how that put Solon to happen. It did. So right now the Nationals are one of only 9 teams with under 10 wins, but we are very clearly not the most pathetic team in baseball. That would be the Oakland Athletics, who just recently announced, not technically announced, but officially announced their move to Las Vegas, which I think is a travesty, but also I think is the right move in a situation where there were no right moves. The right move was to build a new stadium in Oakland and actually, like, care about the team. That was the right move, but yep. It was clear they weren't going to do that. So if they weren't going to do that, and all right, yeah, it's probably better they moved.
Yeah,
But they are 4-17 through 21 games. They already have a run differential greater than 100, -100, I should say, and they are making the Nationals look like a World Series contender. So, please remember, Nats fans, it could be worse, but
it's still, so much worse.
It's still pretty bad. So the big contingency of fans who wanted Dom Smith out of the two hole wanted Stone Garrett into the lineup. Not necessarily into that two hole, but definitely just batting. And the differences in their stats are night and day. Now, granted, Garrett's rocking at more than 40 less at bats, but that's because he doesn't get playing time. I don't get it. He's got a doubling him up in OPS and in more than doubling him up in OPS plus. Slugging's higher, OBP is higher, he has more home runs, one. Higher batting average. Is more RBI, and look, okay, RBI is bad stat, I know, but he has 5 RBI and 26 at-bats. Dom Smith has 70 at-bats, he has 4 RBI. Like, it's crazy to me.
I went to Nats Guards, the last game of that series on the Sunday. I think that was the game that they finally liberated Stone and started playing him, and he was in the lineup with Dom Smith, and it was just... It's just so funny to see, like,
it's night and day.
The difference between the two. Yeah, it's like 4-pitch, 5-pitch out at bat without any, like, production or moving the runners. And then Garrett comes up and is like, yeah, I'm just going to hit a double on the second pitch. It's really just insane how, like, how much different, like, confidence-wise the two are. Especially, I'd even say confidence. Like Garrett carries like a different swagger about himself around the bases, and it's just it's fun to watch. It's like Dom Smith shows up, he's like slouched and bleh, I'm gonna strike out.
Dom Smith doesn't.
I love Garrett.
Dom Smith has made his money already. He's been in the majors for
he got his
7 years now.
Got his MVP votes.
What?
He got MVP votes.
How many? One. Say one. No. Oh my God, you're right. He was 13th. Oh, it was 20.
Yep.
2020.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it's Mickey
nothing
Mouse.
Counts that, nothing counts that year.
Yeah, look, Tuck Juan Soto's number.
So mad. Look, Stone Garrett. No one's saying this guy is the next Soto, but that's because he's batting better than Soto this year. no one's saying this guy is going to be, you know, an all-star hitter or anything. But if he gives you more production than the next guy, you play that guy.
Got 16 votes.
I know that. That's crazy. I know that we want to lose the games this year and get the high draft pick, and I get that, but in an 162 game season, it's not as easy to make tanking seem viable and normal. Because in the NFL, 16 games, 17 games now, you lose a game badly and it's like, well, I gotta wait a whole other week for the next game, and this is only gonna go on for a couple more weeks more, so it's sensible to purposely try and lose these ones. But in baseball, it's more like you're going to lose them anyways. You might as well like try and win. And you might as well give your fans something to watch. And if you're just going to keep putting out Dom Smith in the two hole or whatever and Stone Garrett on the bench inexplicably, you're just telling the fans that you don't care. And it's obvious that you don't care. And that's what's kind of sad to me. We'll get back to ownership and management in a minute. But the Dom Smith, Stone Garrett controversy is definitely, I think, the microcosm of this team so far. This year, this complete unwillingness by the staff to make the better decision that would ultimately be Pyrrhic anyways, but would regardless be the better decision, and to just kind of let our guys, you know, lie out there to die.
Yeah, it's rough. I think even like when you're building your lineup on a team that isn't very good, like the Nationals or like the A's don't really have that much future, but the Nats do. Like a guy like CJ Abrams, right? Should he really be in the majors? Like, is he really up to major league quality? And the answer is on a team like that, on the Nationals, maybe. The bottom line is there's a reasonable world where he should be in AAA, right? But the reason why you have him in the major leagues right now is to have him see and, you know, get used to major league stuff.
And Dom Smith, in no world is ever going to be a part of your team in 3 years.
Exactly. He's a guy who plays first base because you need someone to play first base on a 100-loss team. There's
honest to God. So, do I think that Stone Garrett is going to be here in 3 years? No, I don't. But he's definitely has a higher chance than Dom Smith.
So I just don't understand the point of having like 90% of your lineups being 2-3-4 Smith, Candelario, Meneses, right? Throw me some Abrams at bats. Throw me some Robles at bats if you really want to. Give me some Ruiz, some Garcia at bats. Garcia and Ruiz have looked great so far this year. The numbers look good, and they just have a lot more. They've looked a lot more like through in their swings and more confident in the hacks that they're taking, which is good, which is what you expect. So let them build off of that. Give them more at bats. Let them see more pitches. You're not going to win games, regardless of your managerial decisions. So win games in the future now, right? Develop your guys. I just don't understand it.
Look, I don't mean to be an armchair GM, but that's exactly what I mean to be. And I understand that there is a level of depth and confusing things to being a general manager or a manager or a bench coach that me, as someone who has not been a part of the game, especially not at the major league level, would understand in a million years. I get that. There are things that I can say as a fan that, oh, it would be easy, just do this, do that. It wouldn't be that easy. But there are some things where it would be that easy. Like changing the batting order, that's that easy. That's something I could do. I could go in there and I could take the lineup card and I could say, he's going to bat for him and this guy isn't going to bat at all. And so when it's the simple things, I don't get it. If you're going to lob at me contractual stuff and you know, who to sign and who not to sign, that's one thing. Because you got to consider the farm system and the guys who you currently have, the other guys on the market, how much is it going to cost, what precedent is this going to set for other players you're signing, and the list goes on. I'm not going to get on you for that. Like, the Soto negotiations last year, as depressing as those were, the Nationals were really never going to keep Soto after they leaked that $440 million offer. But, God, a lot of these things, it's just like, this is not something that's very hard to get done, and it is being treated
They're making it hard.
To that regard, it just seems like you don't care about your fans, because they don't. They don't care about the fans.
The gall of it all, too, especially with the Garrett thing, is that, like, they went up. It reminds me a lot of like, in the World Cup, in the 2022 World Cup, the U.S. I'm gonna dumb this down because I'm not sure the cross section of baseball fans and soccer fans. But the United States had this really good player named Gio Reyna, super young, super super talented player from who plays in the Bundesliga for Dortmund. And they just weren't penciling him into the lineup. And everyone was like, what is happening? And it comes out a few weeks later that he was being like a bit of a problem after the team had departed the World Cup. It came out that he was being a problem in camp and having like a bad attitude. There's a whole bunch of other things. And if that was the case with Stone Garrett or whoever, some of the young guys, they're moping around and, you know, taking at bats, you want to go Tony Lewis on it. At least that's precedented. You know what the excuse was that they weren't giving Stone Garrett enough at bats?
What?
It's because the pitching that the Nationals were facing was right-handed, and they didn't want him to face those splits. They didn't want to go righty-righty. That is the most 1995 excuse I have ever seen for a team not playing someone who is on a hot streak. I don't get it.
But it's not going to change because there's no accountability. When the top down is indifferent about the painful struggles of the team, there is no situation where one guy will look at another and say, we need something to change here. We need to do this, do that. And that's why you see this team, which continually gets pounded by far superior teams. You inexplicably keep seeing the same rosters get trotted out. Look, we're going to lose a lot of games this year. We told y'all that in the episodes from a year ago. We said at the beginning of this year, like, this team was always going to lose a lot of games, and that's fine. You come out at the beginning of the year with a 0-0 record, and you're the same as everyone else, and you try and get off to that hot start. We'll get to it in a minute, but the Pirates are putting the league on fire right now. They're like 15-7.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we could have been that team. At this moment, we're not. We aren't going to be. It's fine. So why are we still holding on to this idea that we need to trot out the same roster every time? If we're going to lose games, which we are going to do, I would rather we just lose them in a way that shows me something to get excited for in the future. Because there is not one person who is showing up with their kid wearing a Dom Smith jersey that matches their child's Dom Smith jersey to watch Dom Smith ground into a double play. If we have a runner on first in the first place, which isn't very likely because the two-hole hitter is Dom Smith and the leadoff hitter is... Who's even leading off right now? I don't even remember.
That's usually Lane
Thomas. He's not getting on base. That guy is not good either. You don't see that. So God forbid the Nationals just man up a little bit and show the fans, look, we know we're going to lose because the fans aren't stupid. You have a fan base here which has lived through a lot of suffering. We've had some very, very good regular season teams. The Nationals were, by and large, a top five regular season team of the 2010s. We're Dodgers level. I think we won either the most games or close
to it. It was like top 10 best records in the MLB from 2010 to 2020, which is insane because you remember pre-Harper, the Nationals were as bad, if not worse.
We got two first round
yeah, right now.
Two one overall pits in our own. We just happened to hit on both of them. They're pretty easy ones to hit on, but still.
Yeah.
But the point is, you've got a fan base here, which, despite having a lot of regular season success, has experienced the extreme lows of baseball and really, by extension, sports fandom of the postseason. You've got a fan base here which has watched their team in recent years lose countless stars, superstars, young players, guys who we wanted to see grow up with, guys whose jerseys I owned, guys who we were expecting to go into the hall as Nationals, and now we're not even sure if they're going to be remembered as a National. You've got a fan base here which has weathered the storm to a pretty high extent and is now, even though it's not in large numbers and it's not filling the seats, there are still people showing out to watch these guys play. This is not a gullible fan base. There are a lot of dumb people in this fan base, but that's just how life works. But you've got a fan base here which has seen the problems that every major sports team will see and is not dumb enough to not know when you're trotting out guys there and you're playing the fans. And that's what's happening here. You're playing the fans. You're putting guys in the two hole. You're not giving them a good experience. You're not giving the fans a good experience, I should say. But you're also not giving the players a good experience. And you're not giving the team a good experience. And you're not giving the young players experience. No one is winning in this situation. And it drives me insane as a fan, and it's why I'm seeing such a disconnect between the people watching the games and the people managing the games. There is such a level of, I don't know what's happening in this game, and I don't care. And that's what it's like with me. I am a diehard Nationals fan, and we've played, 20 games this year right now?
Yeah, pretty much at 20 games.
I think
15 away through the season.
I think I've sat down and watched with intent to watch and cheer 5 of those. Because why would I give my time to this team which has shown again and again that they don't care about me? If this team cared about me, Juan Soto would at the very least not be traded. I'm not even saying you would have had to get extended by now, but you trade away a guy like that and you just give the finger to your fans who have bought your merchandise and have watched every game and have shown up every time to support this team that does nothing but kick them while they're down. And by God, if we did not win in 2019, this team would have had nothing to show for one of the most talented cores in the history of the sport. And it's kind of the cop out now. Mm-hmm. That it's the reason we had Gerardo freaking Parra trot our team out at the beginning of the 2023 season. It's been 4 years. People have graduated high school in the time between we won the championship and now. And here we are acting like there's nothing wrong, and it drives me insane. You can talk
about that now.
God, I had to get that.
take a sip of water. yeah, no, it's not been great. However, one thing that has been great and isn't being maximized is the bullpen.
Houston Thompson. I've been a fan of him since day one.
We have been gushing over number 71 in red, white, and blue since the day in late summer of 2021 that he became a Washington National. Got hurt last year. He is currently lighting it up. I watched him pitch live. He's great. Pretty much all of his metrics on Savant are red bubbles, which is good. It means you're in the higher part of the percentile. 95th percentile exit velocity, doesn't walk anyone, gets a lot of swings and misses on chases. And then there's Kyle Finnegan. Let's talk about Kyle Finnegan real quick. Kyle Finnegan, I wouldn't say he's a veteran at this point. I mean, he's 31, but been in the Nats pen for a while. Currently, he is the first percentile, which is the worst pitcher.
Could not be worse.
In expected expected batting average, okay? Expected slugging percentage, barrel percentage, which is basically how often you get hit hard, expected ERA, and then bottom 10 percentile in average exit velocity, hard hit percent, strikeout percent, walk percent, whiff percent, chase rate. I want you to take a wild guess who Davey Martinez is trusting to be the closer of this team.
I don't know, Alex. Who is it?
Kyle Finnegan. Kyle Finnegan, in case this entire segment wasn't clear enough, is another bad decision by Davey Martinez. And it just infuriates me because over the last few years, right, especially down the stretch of 2019, when we were trusting Wander Suero to get like six outs at the back end of a game, and it was like we have two pitchers in our bullpen during the entirity of October 2019, and even then, because Daniel Hudson went on paternity leave for a little bit, remember?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
During the NLCS, he went on paternity leave, so it was down to one. It was Sean Doolittle, and thank God they swept that series, and thank God Anibal Sanchez went like seven or eight no hit innings in game one, because you would be facing such a hole. And it extended to the World Series. And Davey, to his credit, was very, very creative with how he utilized his bullpen. It was game seven. It was Scherzer Strasburg.
Game seven was Scherzer.
It was Scherzer to Corbin, and Corbin pitched like three innings, and then Hudson.
I think Scherzer Hudson went 1-5. I think Corbin went 6-7-8, and I think Hudson did 9. Yeah. And all I remember about that is I'm pretty sure Tanner Rainey got an inning in game two, and I think he gave up either a home run or a double to George Springer. But I just remember, I just remember being really excited so I could tell everyone that a dude named Tanner pitched in the World Series.
And that was the 2020 or 2019, that game, the Nationals put up like 10 in the seventh, so it was out of reach anyway. My bottom line is, I think Davey's just given up, because there is having like the whiteboard of the GIF or like the GIF of the guy with all like the algebra symbols flying around his head calculating things, and that was him in 2019. I'll give him credit for that. He made lemonade out of some really sour lemons with that bullpen. He figured it out and he turned it around. And now he's been gifted with a lot of good young arms, not even young arms, but good young arms like Kyle Finnegan or like some of these other guys in the bullpen. And some like grizzled, vet arms that are decent, like Erasmo Ramirez and people like that can, managed to get outs. Erasmo Ramirez, part of the Nicaraguan national team for the World Baseball Classic. But that's not a great feat. But it shows that, these are some quality guys. And he's just not trusting him. He's trusting Finnegan. I don't know why. I don't know why you're putting him into these situations. But, one has a lot of red circles and one doesn't. One has a lot of blue circles.
And even if you want to run by some stupid, you know, Davey Martinez type eye test, Kyle Finnegan doesn't pass the eye test. He doesn't pitch better. He doesn't hit his spots more. He doesn't do better under pressure. There's no metric in which you can look at and go, Kyle Finnegan's the guy here.
Control. That's the only thing I can think of with Kyle Finnegan.
Mason Thompson, even then it's... That, you get more control by more experience. You're not going to get that if you're playing Kyle Finnegan over him. And by the way, yeah. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the whole creative bullpen managing, because I think anyone could manage a bullpen in 2019 when you had pretty much three different all-star starting pitchers, plus a fourth who was hitting his stride at the right time. And then mm-hmm. Joe Ross, who's about as good of a five starter as you could ask for, at least in 2019. Dude, Matt Scherzer was Matt Scherzer. Steven Strasburg, especially in the postseason, was unbelievable. And Anibal Sanchez went, you know, seven no-hit innings. You had Patrick Corbin, who, look, everyone's done a diss on the Corbin signing, as they very well should, because 6 years, 90 million, 94 million, whatever.
Yeah.
It's pretty absurd. But
I think that's just a systemic failure of baseball to pay pitchers. But
yeah,
there's more to that that isn't going to be talked about here.
I will just never forget how good he was that year and how deadly his slider was. So yeah. I'm not a Corbin defender, but I'm also not an active Corbin hater. I just think he's one of those guys who he helped us win a championship, and now he's along for the ride. Probably get traded for some, you know, top 30 prospect, and we're gonna lose our minds over it. But I don't know. I just think, like, another thing is, like, this is a smaller issue, but K-Bear Ruiz has been tearing up. He's been hitting the cover off the ball, really, at least for the standards, which were set kind of low last year, honestly. He's been playing well, and he's been making good contact, and a lot of times his good contact doesn't result in hits, but a lot of times it does result in hits, and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not hitting like a Mike Trout, but he's also not hitting like a Dom Smith. You got to give him the time of day to keep improving. And when you're not going to be playing him at catcher, which is understandable, catchers need their days off because that is a physically demanding position. I'll never understand it.
Yeah.
If you want to give Riley Adams the day at catcher, please do it. I'm asking you to. But put K-Bear in as the hitter. The designated hitter. You need someone to designated hit. Someone's got to do it. You might as well, you know, make it your good player who you want to get more at bats anyways. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll just never get it. But I just think it starts at the top. The ownership has been a disaster for a while, and there was all this talk about selling and who it was going to go to. And it was kind of that talk about selling that you get like when you expect that it's already a done deal. And it wasn't talked about, is it going to get bought? It's when it gets bought, you know, what is going to happen? Who is going to make the big changes? Whatever. I don't really care. I want like a Jeff Bezos or something, because I want a guy who's just going to open his pockets. But for my money, you could have Alex run the team. I don't care. I just want someone who actually has an iota of interest in preserving what is a young but exciting team. And I also say that in the youth of the organization. And we're less than 20 years old. There's not another team in baseball that can boast that. And there is a bit of a wonder in that. A bit of a, you know, young guns on the block vibe to it when we won in 2019. And really, when we were a World Series favorite in 2012, we had that same vibe to us as well. You know, 7 years, 8 years after our expansion, well, you know, not expansion, but 8 years after our move to be in that position, that's something that I feel like there's such a big platform to work with there. And even now, you can still work with that young identity. You can play to it. You can say, if they want to say every day in a tweet or whatever that, you know, the World Series champion for 2019, how about you change that with, you know, the youngest team in baseball? You know, is that a stupid idea? Probably, but at least it's something. You play into a certain kind of identity.
Give someone something to work with instead of just doing old things again. I think it's I appreciate that you brought up the social media, because I didn't even think about it, but now that you bring it up, the way that social is treated this weekend was like very like emblematic of how the Nationals are operating as an organization. Friday, Friday the 21st was the coldest game in Nationals history to that point. Socials brought it up. It was like a photo of Manessa's like smiling in the snow or whatever. Cool. They win that game and they're like, they like in the lineup card the next day, it's like, we're the winners of the coldest game in Nationals history. Okay, a little old, but all right. It's the coldest game in Nationals history again on Saturday. They win that game. Guess what the caption was for the lineup card the next morning?
Was it Alex?
We're the winners of the coldest game in Nationals history.
It's just,
and it's just, it's like, I get it. It's funny. You're trying to be like back to back to back to back, but give us like, just freshen it up a little bit.
It seems menial to be coming down on the freaking social media manager, but
yeah, I'm sorry, but
you know, that's where a lot of people are going to access the team, especially when you can't watch a game. You're going to see it on Twitter or TikTok or YouTube or whatever. And you want that to also be a positive experience. And as a brand, you know, as an MLB team, but as any sort of brand, you want every single interaction that a consumer has with your products to be positive. And the Nationals are not that. The Nationals are not a... I feel like that's the meat of it. The Nationals, from top to bottom, from their richest owner to their smallest ball boy to their freaking shag in the Florida Complex League, it's not quality. It's not there. They don't care. And that's why... Honest to God, it's why we're not putting out as many of these episodes, because I don't care as much. And that's why no one's coming to the games, because they don't care. And that's why the team is doing badly, because the manager doesn't care. And I feel like I'm talking my way into a circle here, and I'm like a record just spinning on end. But there's no accountability anywhere. And I said that already, but I'll say it again, because you really have to look at the owner. There's no accountability. There's no willingness to say to the bald-headed GM, who really has not done anything since he won with a core that was more or less gifted to him, because you can't really mess up Soto, Harper, Rendon, all those guys. You more or less given to him. And there's no accountability there. And a better team than us, good God, can you imagine if we were the Dodgers right now? There's no person in that organization would be flying out the window by tomorrow. I just wish we could clean house. And that's really what it all comes down to. I don't even care if we get better, man. At this point, I don't even care if the guys we pick up are people who are really going to move our team forward. Obviously, I want that. But I just want there to be a foundation to build off of. I want there to be a moment in time that I can point to as like, hey, this is where the learners decided we should stop this train wreck before it kills everyone. And I don't think we're going to get that anytime soon. I think Darnell Coles and Jim Hickey and Davey Martinez, as terrible as they are and as abhorrently bad at their jobs as they have shown themselves to be again, I don't think they're going anywhere, because you know what that would take? That would take responsibility and action. And that would mean someone would have to write a press release, and that would mean there would have to be a press conference and then a new hiring cycle. And it won't happen because the learners don't care. And when an owner doesn't care, and the GM especially doesn't care, you are not going to get anything done. And for the love of God, if we had not won in 2019, not only would we be looking at the failure of this core as even with that of, I can't even think of a good example. Not only would we be looking at the failure of this tour as one of the great in the history of sport, we might actually be looking up, because at that point, there's no way Rizzo would have still had a job. There's no way Davey would have still had a job. But here we are writing off something that happened four championships ago. We've had a new NL East winner in the time since. We've had multiple winners of different, you know, league and team since then. And we're still riding off of it. And let me tell you where that's going to get you in 2030, when we're telling our kids about the championship we had 11 years ago. It's going to get us nowhere. And it just makes me sad.
I agree. I saw something that it was like, now the sale is like on hold until the Masson deal gets worked out. And all that leads me to believe, just with the cynical cynicism that has been ingrained into my skull of rooting for this team, it just leads me to believe that the team is not their heart. The learners are not into it. Their heart isn't into it. And no light is at the end of the tunnel. Because there is no resolution to the Mastin situation until Angelos dies. And no one knows when that's going to be.
How old even is he now?
He's like 90-something. 93.
Interesting.
But he looks like a... not. He doesn't look a day over 91. 107.
And a lot of the things aren't even accountability issues. It's just like basic baseball stuff. Like last year, again, every single team and player and front office member in the league knew that the Nationals were going to be terrible after next year, as in, you know, this current regular season. But you know what we had last year that made it kind of fun was Joey Meneses, who out of nowhere turned his career journeyman story into that of someone who came in and became a fan favorite and et cetera, et cetera. And then we didn't trade him. And I can't figure out why we didn't trade him. We could have marketed him as a bat who's finally cleaned up his act, is no longer stuck within the shackles of the MILB. And we decided to keep him for really no discernible reason, but to, quote, put fans in the seats. So I don't know why I quoted that. I didn't get that quote from anyone, but that just seems like why it would have been. And it happened, and now we're stuck with this guy who's we're not going to get anything out of. And it's just like, man, what's even the point anymore?
Yeah, it's... I would have even... I don't even mind holding him on during the offseason. I don't know if you... I kind of zoned there for a sec, but I don't know if you mentioned the World Baseball Classic. Did you?
I did not, no.
Yeah. He hits 2 home runs against the United States.
Game with massive eyeballs from the American side, from the Mexican side.
From every MLB team.
Every MLB team. There are probably scouts there. If not for their game, then for the games before it with these unknown people from like British Islands and you know, I think Venezuela was in the group. All these people. And Meneses, off of, you know, substantial all-world pitching, you can say all you want about the United States not having high-quality pitchers on the team. That is all-world pitching regardless. You hit multiple home runs. You probably have interest. And you don't do anything with it.
I cannot imagine another way that interest would have possibly been higher than it was at that very moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, what makes this episode really funny is that we actually had like a 7-step, you know, like we normally do.
We have a plan. And we're like an hour in. And we're not even off of 2 because we've just been ranting.
We're going to wrap it up soon because I honestly can't even bring myself to go, oh, well, you know, Brady House is hitting 275 and blah, blah, blah. Like, because how?
This is the airing of grievance.
This is the airing of grievance episodes. Alex handles the titles, and I'm certain you're going to come up with a Joe 1.
This is the Festivus for...
Festivus for my pain and suffering.
The Depressivus.
Ooh.
Ooh, that was good. That might be the one.
No, it's not going to be the one at all. But Festivus for the depressed of us? I could see it. Oh. I don't know. There are things to be excited for in this team if you swing hard enough. And yes, our farm system, which is what we have dedicated an entire podcast to, is definitely something which can be clapped for, should be clapped for, will be clapped for. But the joy of having prospects was always that they were going to complement your team, and every once in a while you were going to have one that was going to be your team's center, an Adley Rutschman, or, you know, go back far enough, a Bryce Harper, and then every once in a while you end up with a Joe Adele or a
that guy's name, Mark Eppel,
Mark Apple, or Mickey Moniak or whatever. And the joy of watching the prospects was that they were going to come. When we started this podcast, we still had Joey Meneses. We still had Juan Soto on the team. We still had guys who were going to make their way into, you know, all world teams, all MLB teams, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that was the joy of the prospects, was that they were going to you know, fit the spots that will improve these other guys. And right now, if James Wood became MLB ready by tomorrow, who would he be there to compliment? It's happening more so now with guys like Corbin Carroll and Christian Walker and, you know, Gunnar Henderson. But generally, the prospects take their time and they have their slow starts. And Francisco Alvarez for the Mets is having his slow start right now. And that's just how it goes. And that's fine. That's normal. Who would they be complimenting right now? There's no one. And if you asked me right now who I would go to a Nationals game to watch, I don't know what I would say. I sincerely don't know who I would say. I would probably say CJ Abrams because he can be kind of fun at short. And that's about
maybe a Gorday or Gray.
I will say someone that else. Is kind of like my one saving grace from the season is that Mackenzie Gore looks like a bona fide stud. And I mean, you know, he has his way to go, but you know, in four games, at, you know, 25 strikeouts, a 3.4 ERA, there's a lot of stuff to be built on. And eye test wise, he's definitely shown that he can be a high level starting pitcher, admittedly in a small sample size. So there are things to be excited for, and I know we're being a little bit dreary this episode, but that's because I've never, and I will say this also, I am a Commanders fan. I am a Wizards fan. I have seen my fair share of really, really terrible sports teams. But despite that, I have never seen a team. And again, this is coming from a guy who was a Redskins fan in 2019. I have never seen such a low level of morale and interest. Because even for better or for worse, when FedEx Field was getting taken over by whichever team we were playing that week, and I had literally no one in the world to watch, I still felt that the community, even at their homes, was pulling together to watch the games. And in a weird way, they almost bonded over how bad we were. There's a sense of friendliness and community that comes with watching someone that's watching a product that is so bad that only you can understand. But the Nationals aren't a lovable kind of bad. The Nationals aren't the kind of bad where you tailgate, and in the tailgate, you know, you clink your drinks together and you go, well, we're going to lose this one by 25, but at least we, you know, we're going to have a good time. They're not that kind of fun. They're not the kind of fun where you get excited to go watch because something good could happen in the meantime when we're down by 7. Or just the boring kind of fun. The kind of fun where I can't look at this team and say, hey, at least they're trying, because they're not.
Boring kind of bad.
I feel like that's the heart of it. This isn't the fun kind of bad, because there is that. There are tanking teams that are lovable underdogs, and when they steal a series, you go, hey, you know, watch out for the blank next year. The Nationals are not that. There's no one right now who has this on their radar. And next year, this will be different a little bit. We're still going to be pretty bad next year, but the more we start to get our young guys up, the better off we're going to be. But I don't know. I think that's the kind of the epitome of it. We're the boring kind of bad. We're not the lovable kind of bad. And that extends outside our fan base, but for the most part, that extends within our fan base. And that is why I think we're seeing a level of disinterest and low morale within the Nationals fan base that we've never seen before.
Yeah. I don't have much to add. I think you epitomized it.
Yeah, my tongue hurts. I don't know why I'm talking so much. But yeah. I know this is kind of a depressing episode. I promise you this was not how we planned it out. And I was also complaining about the prospects, but don't worry, we're not stopping making episodes. We hope to see you guys again next time. We appreciate, you know, us sticking through, even though our upload schedule is horrible.
We've been working it out. I got my wisdom teeth pulled, and then
it's been a whole.
And then after it, I got a cyst in my throat, and I couldn't really talk well. And then we were out for either college visits or what have you. So it's been a mess.
It's been rough, but
we're pulling the reins in a little bit.
I don't head out for the summer for another like month or two months closer to. So yeah, hopefully so we can get at least two or three more out in that time, but. Thanks to the few people who probably listened to this whole way. I love you very much. Hope you'll be back next time, and That's all I got. Goodbye.
Yeah. Wear your seatbelt. Wait. Yeah, wear your seatbelt. Bye.